Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting programs from the Golden Age of Radio. I'm your host, Mark LeVonier, and coming up in this hour, Variety for a Cause. We'll hear the Hollywood March of Dimes of the Year from January 24th, 1942. This was a radio special broadcast on the NBC Blue and Red networks, also Mutual, for a March of Dimes fund appeal, but also to wish the president at the time, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, a happy birthday. With too many big names to list, which you'll hear in just a moment, it's the Hollywood March of Dimes of the Year.
Hollywood, March of Dimes of the Year, 1942.
Ladies and gentlemen, a few days from now, somebody's going to have a birthday. He's Commander-in-Chief of the Army, and he's Commander-in-Chief of the Navy, and I suppose he's Commander of a lot of other things. But most of all, he's our President. On account of Friday's his birthday, and on account of his birthday celebrations that have helped so many boys and girls to walk and live again, they've asked me to kind of tell you, Mr. President, how everything is in America tonight. Mr. President, The state of the nation on your 60th birthday. Well, first, there's 130 million people. They got names like Smith and Jones and Populus and Ryan and Goldberg and Spinetta and Cabot and, well, there's so many of them, they just can't all be out here in Hollywood tonight to tell you what they think. So a lot of other people by the name of Bing Crosby and Bob Hope and Irene Dunne and the Merrimacks and Claudia Colbert and Humphrey Bogart and Janet Beecher and Dennis Day and Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy and Marlena Dietrich and Tyrone Power and Kay Kaiser and James Cagney and Maureen O'Sullivan and Arch Obler and Fibber McGee and Molly and Don Quinn and Gordon Jenkins and Elliot Lewis and Meredith Wilson and Deanna Durbin and, of course, and, oh, I'm out of breath. They're going to kind of take the other folks' places and tell you just how things are going. First, Mr. President, America's singing all about love and dove and moon and June and you and I and all that stuff. But they're singing a new kind of song, too. New. Yet I guess it's not exactly new. Hear what they're singing now. Sang for Mr. Lincoln during another war, a song about, we're coming, Father Abraham, 300,000 strong. America's singing that song in a different way now, Mr. President. Listen to him sing it.
Freedom, freedom, all God's people are free. Listen to an American troubadour from the USA. For all people who cry out to be free. Free to sail the seven seas. Free to worship as we please. If the birds up in the trees can be free, why can't we? I'm bringing a song of freedom. Free to speak and free to hear, free from want, free from fear. Sons of freedom, far and near, who agree, sing with me that all God's people shall be free. Sing with me that all God's people shall be free.
Well, that takes care of singing. Thank you, Mr. Bing Crosby. And now about laughing. Oh, sure, we're laughing, Mr. President. Laughing good. Laughing because there's 130 million of us who are all together in everything we do. Listen, Mr. President.
Of course. Thank you. course, now that Santa Anita's closed, the whole place is deserted. Yesterday, two of Bing Crosby's horses were running around the track when one horse turned to the other and said, "Where is everybody?" The other horse said, "I don't know. They were here when we started." But really, I'm a little nervous tonight. I just finished making a picture with Madeline Carroll. Madeline Carroll, you know, that's the other kind besides AC and DC. But imagine working 8 weeks with Madeline Carroll, 8 weeks. Imagine what that cost me in vitamin pills alone. But I'll never forget my first love scene with Maddie. She ran her slender fingers through my curly locks, and as she fondled my silken hair... Oh, now, please, as she... Really, my locks, my lovely locks. And as she fondled my silken hair, she bent over and tenderly whispered a word in my ear, just one word. Dandruff. So we get along great. We already have pet names for each other. I call her my little honey girl, and I didn't know she used that kind of language. But I feel great tonight. I've been up at Lake Arrowhead for a couple of days' rest. Lake Arrowhead, that's 150 miles from here as the crow waves. But you know, at this time of the year, half the people go to Palm Springs, the other half go to Arrowhead, and anyone that's still in Hollywood is better either a tourist or works in an airplane factory. I stopped at a beautiful hotel up there. I warmed my hands, then went out of the joint where I was going to stay. It was a nice place called the Chateau Frostbite. Very beautiful place. It was really a ramshackle place. It was the first time I ever saw a hotel fall apart in slow motion. It was so broken down that it was on the verge of falling, but the termites were afraid to go back and take that last bite. It was a nice place. The rates were very reasonable, $6 a night if you slept five in a room. For 50 cents more, you were introduced. I signed the register, and I wanted to pay my bill in advance, but the desk clerk didn't have change for a rubber tire. And boy, was it cold. I took out a dollar bill to buy cigarettes, and when I looked at the dollar, Washington was wearing earmuffs and saying, "Gee, I wish I had a beard like Abe has." It was so cold that the thermometer didn't point to any temperature. Every few minutes, it would just say, "This is ridiculous." And boy, was my teeth chattering. I put a letter up to my lips to lick the flap. Honest, I did. I put a letter up to my lips to lick the flap, and boy, well, it's right there. You can see. Anyway, before I could stop, my teeth ate it. I ordered a cocktail. Cocktail, and it was the first time I ever saw an olive and a pimento fighting to see which one should be in the middle. My room was cold, too. I didn't mind the cold so much, but every 5 minutes, a guy would come in and take a side of beef out of the closet. And there was an awful draft coming up from the foot of the bed, so I threw on more blankets. There was still a draft, so I threw on more blankets. Finally, I decided to take off my snowshoes. And, of course, I did a little skiing up there. I wore two pairs of skis, one for my feet. I'll never forget, I took off the ski jump and went soaring through the air. The skis were stuck in the ground. A gopher looked up at me and said, "Okay, bud, you can eat me, but you don't have to use chopsticks." But what sports up at Arrowhead? Bing was there. Bing tried to steer the bobsled, and we went off a cliff. I won't say we sailed very far, but a kid in Missouri looked up and yelled, "Gee, I thought we had nothing to worry about this far from the coast." Well, here's where I walk, ladies and gentlemen, so let's keep them all walking. Good night.
Takes care of the laughing. Thank you, Mr. Bob Robert Hope. Well, I've got to go on with my report on the state of the nation. We're swinging it, Mr. President, I'll say. That's the way the fellows on the boats and behind the guns and in the airplanes want it. Don't you think? They'd want to know that the cats are still sprawling, the jitterbug's still cutting the rug, and the quartets are still taking songs apart and putting them together again to a boogie beat.
Heart of Texas. The coyotes wail along the trail, deep in the heart of Texas. the heart of Texas. The Dokies ball, ball and ball, deep in the heart of Texas.
Ole, ole, ee,
oh, the coyotes wail along the trail.
Deep in the heart of Texas.
Ole, ole, ee,
rabbits rush around.
Deep in the heart of Texas.
The sage in bloom is like a
swinging. Thanks, Mary Max. And now, Mr. President, about what America's thinking tonight. I know we kids are thinking, and how grateful we are to you. But what the grown-up folks are thinking, well, that's just too big for me to handle. There's so many things they've got to think about. Here's one of them, and maybe they'd better tell you.
People who think they can live apart from the world, who think they can dodge their responsibilities as part of the human family. Martha Ellis said that to me. Listen to her story.
Yes, my name is Martha Ellis. I know why you're here. You want to talk to me about what happened. I'll tell you. It began a week ago. A week ago tonight. Freddie, my husband, was at Lodge Moving. The baby was asleep. The door. A woman was standing there. She said,
"Good evening. I'm your neighbor, Mrs. Schaefer. May I come in?"
Neighbor? Someone in the apartment building. I hadn't paid much attention to my neighbors. Well, all right. Let her come in for a few minutes. What was the distance?
You're the very last person I've called on in the whole building, Mrs. Ellis. But I know you'll want to make it unanimous.
Unanimous? I thought to myself, what have I got into? Make what unanimous?
If you'll sign this petition, Mrs. Ellis.
Petition for what?
From you. It's about the gangster in the house.
What?
Don't know. It's that man, Joseph Barr. You know. The newspaper's been full of him. Larceny, racketeering. He's done just about everything.
Just a moment, please. I don't pay much attention to crime news, so I'm afraid I don't know your Mr. Joseph Barr. And anyway, what's all this to do with me?
But I told you. He's leased an apartment in this building. The apartment right across from yours.
Really?
Well, yes. The rest of us in this building don't feel that we want a man of that sort as our neighbor. So we're requesting the real estate company to have him go. You'll sign, of course.
I will not.
What? What did you say?
I will not sign any petition.
But you heard me say...
Yes, I heard you, but I'm rather allergic to signing petitions.
Mrs. Ellis, I'm afraid you don't understand. This is a serious matter.
Serious? What's serious about it? A gangster moves into the house. I think it's rather amusing.
But you don't understand.
I understand that I'm going to mind my own business.
A man of that character in our building is your business.
Not at all. I'm in my apartment. He's in his. There's quite a wide hallway between us. Wide enough to make petitions quite unnecessary.
You're making a grave mistake, Mr. Ellis. Good night.
Making a grave mistake. I remember I laughed as she went. The baby woke up then. I went in and laughed as I told him about it. But when Fred came home, I didn't tell him. Oh, no. Why worry, Freddie? He was like that woman, worried about other people's business. A gangster in the house? Very funny. All right, Mr. Gangster could have his side, we ours, so why worry about it? Why even think about it? And now, I'll think about it all the rest of my life. Because tonight, Freddie went to lodge meeting. Baby asleep. So peaceful, so very quiet. Good to feel alone once in a while. And then...
Hello.
Well, I turned. A man standing there.
I said, how are you?
What are you doing in here?
Mind if I sit down? Thanks.
Who are you?
Oh, it's a nice place.
Answer me. Who are you?
Your neighbor across the hall, Joe Barr. Pleased to meet you.
You didn't come in the front door. I locked
it. That's all right. I come in the back way.
It's definitely not all right. What do you want?
Want? Nothing. Just to sit here. Just to sit here.
He sat there looking at me. I wasn't afraid. Angry, yes, but not afraid.
You see, little lady, you're doing me a big favor.
Favor?
Yeah. A couple of guys come in my apartment and they ain't healthy for me to see. So I looked around to see where I could hide out for a little while. Then I remembered that you didn't sign the petition. Oh, I heard about that. So here I am.
Get out of here.
Maybe you didn't hear me. I gotta stay here until a couple of guys...
I heard you and you heard me. Get out of here.
The voice, keep it down.
Now, are you going to get out of here or must I pick up the telephone and call...
Wait a minute. Talk about calling somebody. Maybe you don't understand who I am, lady.
I understand that you're in my apartment and I don't want you here. So will you please go at once?
But I told you there's some guys in my apartment.
But what has that got to do with me? This is my home. Go now.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe you don't understand who I am.
You're being ridiculous.
Don't touch that telephone.
I certainly will if I want to. My face. His hand on my face. There wasn't any pain, but I knew his hand had hit my face. The room moving around me, the floor lifting. And then his voice.
You'll be a smart girl now, won't you? Understand? Joe Barr, he didn't get where he is by being a nice boy. Playing, like they say, the game with the rules. So now you'll be a smart girl.
I heard what he said, but somehow I didn't. All I could think of was his hands hitting me. No one had ever touched me before, no one. And now this cheap hoodlum. And then suddenly I wasn't thinking of that anymore. The shot, the window. My baby crying. I ran into the bedroom to him. Baby, darling. Darling,
don't be afraid. Mark, come on out of there. Put your hands up. Listen, copper. There's a kid in here and a dame. Now, don't try anything. A kid and a dame.
Then I understood. The men out there. Police after him.
I can't keep quiet, I tell you. The coppers ain't gonna throw slugs with a kid around. I can cry.
But my baby didn't want to cry. He was sitting up in my arms, his eyes wide, wondering and listening.
I tell you, make that kid cry. All right? I'll make him cry.
Suddenly, it was as if everything was gone. The room, the noises outside. Just the three of us sort of standing in space. The baby in my arms and he coming toward us.
I'll make him cry, and then I'll take him and I'll walk out of here, because nobody would hurt a kid. Now, would they?
I heard him say that. Take my baby and walk out of there. And then I was moving back away from him. And then behind me, it was something. The bureau drawer. Freddie's gun was in my hand. My name is Martha Ellis. I have a husband and a child. A week ago, they were all there was to life.
It's about the gangster in the house.
1 week ago.
I'm in my apartment. He's in his. There's quite a wide hall between us.
A week ago.
I can always lock the door. A week. You're making a grave mistake, Mrs. Ellis.
A grave mistake. There are people who think they can live apart from the world. Who think they can dodge their responsibilities as members of the human family and not pay the piper.
Odette Colbert, Mr. Humphrey Bogart, and Miss Janet Beecher. Well, I guess that takes care of Lincoln. Oh, no, it doesn't. I mean, they're singing songs now, too, Mr. President, with lots of thinking in them, like this one. You'll have to stand a little more talking about you and the real reason I'm kind of reporting to you tonight. Somebody's talking, and he's talking to the people, and he's made of wood.
What? Good evening, everybody.
Hello, Bergen.
Well, hello, Charlie. Aren't you proud to be included in such an important event, Charlie?
Am I? It's a real privilege, too, to be able to say happy birthday, Mr. President.
Yes, it is, isn't it?
Yes, it is, yes. I shut it down, too. And I have a message for all the boys and girls of America.
Well, what is it?
Well, it's just this. Let's give our dimes and keep them walking.
Well, that's very good.
Yes.
That's a fine sentiment, Charlie.
Thank you.
And I'm happy to hear that you're contributing your dimes to this cause.
Well, not only that, Bergen, I don't stop at that.
Oh, you don't?
No, no. I've even gone so far as writing a book.
Writing a book?
Uh-huh.
Where?
And all the proceeds will go to the March of Dimes.
Well, isn't that fine?
Yes.
And it shows initiative, too.
Uh-huh.
I'm proud of you, Charlie.
Oh, thank you. And what's more, Mr. Bergen, you are the inspiration for my book.
Well, well.
Uh-huh.
I feel flattered.
Yeah.
Hey, what is your book about, Charlie?
It's about ventriloquism.
Oh, I see. Ventriloquism.
Uh-huh.
What are you calling it? Adventures with a ventriloquist?
No. No. I'm calling it ventriloquism. It's cure and prevention.
Oh, I...
Or the ventriloquist racket exposed.
Oh, I see. Well, young man, ventriloquism is not a racket.
Oh?
No. It's a profession.
A profession?
Yes, it is.
So is rag-picking, but it's still trash.
All right. That's enough of that, young man. I'd advise you to keep my name out of your book.
Oh, I've done that. In the foreword, I say, any resemblance between a ventriloquist and Edgar Bergen is purely accidental.
Oh, I see. Well, so what is it you have to say about me?
Well, you see, I think that will cover the subject.
Yes, I know.
Now, who do you think I dedicate the book to?
Well, I don't know.
Well, to those little unsung heroes, those clever little boys, the ventriloquist assistant.
Oh, I see.
To them, this book is dedicated.
Uh-huh. I see. You're dedicating the book to yourself.
That's it.
Mm-hmm. Well, it makes you a very important little man, doesn't it, in your own estimation?
Yes, it does, yes. After all, Bergen, a good ventriloquist assistant doesn't grow on a tree. I wish I hadn't said that.
Charlie, I don't think you're really qualified to write a book.
No?
Already you've shown profound ignorance of your subject.
Yeah?
Ventriloquism isn't something that you take or leave.
No?
It's something that's given to you.
You mean like malaria?
No. Why, you don't even know the meaning of ventriloquism.
No?
Do you know that it's over 3,000 years old?
No.
Yes. Why, the first known ventriloquist goes way back to the days of the Greeks, a Greek philosopher.
Yeah?
Named Eurycles.
He doesn't know.
Yes. Now, ventriloquists were even found up among the Eskimos.
They weren't found up there, they were chased up there.
Now, why, you don't even know the meaning of the word.
Well, what does it mean?
Well, it comes from the Latin ventro, meaning stomach.
Yeah?
And loca, meaning to speak.
Speaking from the stomach, huh?
Yes.
Paunch prattle.
Well, well, that's the literal meaning, yes. Speaking from the stomach.
You're not fooling me. You know that.
I see.
I know how you do it. I can see your lips move.
Yes.
That burns him up.
Yeah.
I can even do it myself.
Is that so?
Yeah, that's right, chum.
Well, we would be honored with a demonstration.
Gladly. I'll throw my voice in the basement.
All right, go ahead.
Hey, Joe.
What do you want, Charlie?
See?
Yeah.
What are you doing down there, Joe?
Shoveling coal.
See?
Well, that's pretty good. Continue.
All right. Joe will now sing a song in two voices. Go ahead, Joe.
Well, I don't hear anything. Where's Joe?
I think he went outside to send his donation to the March of Dimes.
Oh, he did.
Thanks, Mr. Edgar Bergen and Mr. Charles McCarthy. Well, Mr. President, now I've got a report to you about corn. Corn grows in Illinois and in Indiana and in Iowa and lots of other states. But if you were to take all the corn that grows in all those states of the Union and put it all together, you wouldn't have half as much corn as we've got right out here in Hollywood and over there in New York. Mr. President, a report on the state of corn.
Corn in the Theater. The Barometer Theater presents the almost new theater. A play with
no scenery,
no author,
no program,
no actors,
no play. The Barometer Theater presents
My Head's in the Lowlands.
Everybody should love everybody. Can't you see those people with the sparks coming out of them? Confusion, confusion, confusion. What's it all about? Why do they torture me? Everybody should love everybody. Can't you see those people with the sparks coming out of them? That one over there with a neon nose?
Corn in Music. A new all-American opera based upon a beloved all-American folk song.
The world you get.
Radio. We bring you the 4,386th episode of Lovely Mary, Please Get Up, We Have to Change the Sheets. When we last left Mary, you will remember that Ticonderoga asked her for her hand. But since her first husband was still lost in the offices of the OPM, Mary refused. As we meet her today, she is seated on the veranda. And we hear not her actual spoken words, but the thoughts in her mind. We're very sorry, but at the moment, apparently, she's not thinking. Ah, yes. Now she is.
Everybody should love everybody. Why do I sit? Why do I wait? Why do I sit? Why do I wait?
Why does she sit?
No!
No!
Tune in tomorrow. Please tune in. Please. Please. Please.
Corn in benefit shows.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. Tonight, we bring you the greatest, the most stupendous, the most colossal, the most gargantuan, the greatest, the largest aggregation of stupendous stars ever to be assembled on one platform. First, I take great extreme pleasure in presenting to you the genius of the cinema, Mr. Zweibach, a zombie.
He isn't here. He's out on location.
Oh, well. And now I take terrific pride in bringing you a voice never heard on the air before. A lady who all America has been anxiously awaiting to hear. The premier radio appearance of Miss...
He stayed at home.
Oh, I see. And now I take great pleasure in bringing you...
He's got a cold in the head.
And now I take great pleasure in...
Old face.
And now I take...
Not here.
And now I...
Now.
No one?
Uh-uh.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present, I hope, me.
Corn in Motion Pictures. Proudly, KO Pictures presents a Wonder Boy production. Produced and directed by Wonder Boy. Photography by Wonder Boy. Sets by Wonder Boy. Costumes by Wonder Boy. Written by Wonder Boy. Rewritten by Wonder Boy. Typewritten by Wonder Boy. And starring...
Everybody should love everybody.
Yeah, I fooled you.
Well, Mr. President, that takes care of Corn. I guess you know it already, but the lady was Miss Marlena Dietrich, and the men were Mr. K. Kaiser and Mr. Tyrone Power. Gosh, Mr. President, there are so many folks here who want to talk to you and so many more things to say, but I guess right about here quick, I'd better give you a report on Love. Oh, gosh, there's lots of what's going on. They're sitting in the parlors and holding hands and listening to this. And they're parked in cars and holding hands and listening to this. And gosh, they're even getting married. But I'd better let some grown folks give you a report on that.
Wedding, 1942.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered together here in the sight of God and in the face of this company.
Married? Me getting married? I don't like this. What's he talking so fast for? When he stops talking, I'll be married. Married. Me, Bill West, married. Guess I'm scared. All right, scared. How do you like that?
And you're standing next to me, but if you knew what I'm thinking... But you don't know what I'm thinking. Scared, yeah, and getting more scared every minute.
Lightly, but reverently, discreetly, advisedly, soberly, and in the fear of God.
Marriage is a happiest state. Marriage is a happiest state. Why does that keep running through my head? Marriage is a happiest state, and I'm getting married, and I should be happy. But I'm not. I'm afraid, Bill. I'm standing next to you, and I'm afraid. Are you afraid too, Bill? Should I stop the minister and ask you, are you afraid too, Bill? Are your knees shaking too, Bill? No. No, it's only me. I'm scared, Bill. Scared.
Run together otherwise, and as God's worth does allow, their marriage is not lawful.
Crazy. Everybody says a guy's crazy to get tied up in times like this. What's the matter with me? I'm cold and I'm sweating and I want to get out of here. Yeah, and out of here. You're standing next to me, but I want to get away from you, and I don't know why. You hear me? I don't know why. No, you can't hear me, because I'm not saying anything. I'm just thinking. And what I'm thinking is all mixed up in my head. Never was much good at talking, and I guess I'm not even good for thinking. He's still talking. Talking, honor, obey. Why doesn't someone stop that guy talking until I can think things out? Why doesn't he stop talking?
Bestow upon these thy servants, if it be thy will, to give them.
I keep on talking with every word. I'm all afraid, Bill, and I don't know why. I don't know why. Yes, I do. Because I want to be happy. And I won't be happy with you, Bill. No. They might take you away tomorrow, or next week, or the week after that. And it's bad enough to have someone you just love going away. But when you're married... Oh, Bill, he's got to stop talking. He can't marry me to you. I love you, but I don't want marriage, Bill. Not that kind of marriage. Not a marriage that waits for a knock on the door. This isn't the time for marriage, Bill. It isn't, and he's got to stop talking. He's got to. He's got to.
One dark world without end.
I am a minister of God, and I keep saying the words, but I don't think them. I said them so many times, they almost say themselves. How many times have I said them? This is 2004. 2004 have stood in front of me listening to me say the words, and yet somehow this pair is different. Don't know them, but they're different. Yes, the most important couple that ever stood in front of me. Why should I say that? I know why. Because they are the first I have married since the war started. The first. And so they are important. Yes, marriage now is more important than any other time in the history of the world. An evidence of faith, faith in the future, a decent future of decent people. So these two and the children of them are the future. The world can blow its top off, but as long as they have faith and marry and have faith and have children, it'll be all right. Yes, all right. All right. It's no good standing here thinking. I've got to get out of here. It's better for you, Anne, if I do that. I've got to figure it out now. I've got no right to get married to you now. Not now. Not in this cockeyed world. That's what's wrong with me. It's a cockeyed world. Not for you and me. Not for getting married. A couple of more minutes and I'm going to get out of here. Yeah? Better that way. Better that way.
I'm not going to stand here any longer. Bill, I'm not going to marry you. I'm not. Oh, I love you, Bill, but not marriage. Not now. I've got to stop the minister. Faint. Yes. I'll faint and he won't have finished what he's saying and we won't be man and wife and that'll be all right. Bill... I'm going to stop this. Bill. Bill. In another minute. In another minute.
Good marriage, yes. Good marriage. I may never see them again, but I'll remember them, these two. Because they have faith and they've given me... No. Something is wrong. The girl's face, the boy's, are they frightened? Why should they be frightened? They want to get married. They must want to. For their sake. No. For my sake. I found faith in them and they can't... But their eyes. I must hurry. Yes, hurry. Now!
And I pronounce you man and wife. Well, my friends, didn't you hear me? Man and wife. Well, are you two just going to stand there the rest of your lives, just looking at each other? Mr. and Mrs. West?
Mr. and Mrs. West. Oh, Bill.
Anne.
Oh, Bill, I'm so happy.
So am I, darling. So am I.
Mr. James Cagney and Miss Marino Sullivan and Mr. Lou Merrill. Well, Mr. President, I guess that finishes my report on love and getting married. Now I think I'd better tell you about speed. Yes, sir, everybody's doing everything fast these days. Making airplanes and tanks and guns and doing what they think is right. Why, gee, it's just been a few minutes since Mr. Power and Miss Deeker told everybody how they should reach into their pocketbooks and bust open their dime banks and send you in the money. And already down in Wistful Vista, a couple of folks everybody knows are doing just that. Listen.
Hey, where'd you say my little pig bank was, Molly?
I have it, McGee. Oh. I was in a hurry when I went to the grocery store, so I took it along, and I shook 30 cents out of it for asparagus. Here it is.
Oh, thanks. Ah, so this is the little pig that went to market, eh?
Yep.
Well, come to Papa, Piggy. This is going to hurt you more than it is me. Hand me the tack hammer, Molly.
What you going to do, dearie?
Well, if you'll pardon my presumption, my pretty patootie, I'm going to pulverize this pottery porker and purloin a pile of pelt for the president's party.
Well, all right, here's the hammer. Save enough bacon for breakfast, though.
I'll just tap a hole big enough to hit the jackpot, and maybe I can glue it back together again. Now, be brave, little piggy, will you? Come on, now. Take it on the chin like a good little... Ow!
I thought it was going to hurt him more than it was you.
I'll swear the little beggar dodged. I was trying to be gentle, too.
Well, what for? Didn't you ever notice the stamp on his tummy?
Huh? Where? Oh, my gosh. Made in Japan.
Well, I was going to suggest that you break off his head, but it was too late.
I was going to bust off his tail, but it was twirly.
Oh.
Don't you get it, Molly? I said...
Ain't funny, McGee.
The pig liked it. In fact, it broke him up. Hey, look at the dough, will you? Must be 10 or 12 bucks.
Not if you count the phone slugs and the buttons and the poker chips.
And here's a Roosevelt campaign button. I wonder how long that's been in there.
From that theory, you get three guesses.
Well, you count the money, Molly, while I write a letter to send with it.
You can't send all that small change in a letter.
No, I'll write a check and keep the change. Hey, where's their pencil?
And you can't write the President of the United States in pencil.
I don't know why not. I voted for him in pencil. Seems more democratic to me anyway. I'll say Mr. Franklin D. Roosevelt.
President Franklin D. Roosevelt, not Mr.
Okay, President Franklin D. Roosevelt. Dear Chief.
And don't be so familiar. Huh? Dear Chief, indeed. He's not an Indian.
Well, his family's been here almost as long as the Indians. In fact, I think it was a Roosevelt that paid a few bucks for Manhattan.
That was Peter Stuyvesant.
Well, how's this then? Dear Mr. President, here's a hat full of dimes we're giving you priority on, and we wish you a happy birthday, and I'm sorry we can't afford to send more. And if you could see your way clear to speak to the local guy here about a new spare tire for our car.
McGee! Now, listen, tear that up. You have no business putting that in a letter like this and no business getting a new tire anyway.
Well, you're awful fussy. Hey, how many dimes were there in that bank?
$9.13.
Oh, swell. I'll write a check for, say,
$35. $35? Why, how can you? You've only got $6.85 left in your checking account.
Yeah, but look what I got here in my pocket. See?
Heavenly days, where'd you get all the folding money?
Oh, I and a couple other fellows formed a little combination.
What kind of a combination?
Well, you take two little cubical pieces of ivory and... If they make a combination of 4 and 3 or 6 and 5, you make some money.
McGee, you've been shooting craps again.
Mrs. McGee, I like to refer to it as Birmingham bingo. That's more refined.
Well, now you ought to be ashamed. Maybe they won't want money you won that way.
Oh, no. You trace the history of any dollar in the country back far enough, and no right-thinking person would touch it. Dough is dough, and they'll be glad to get it. Anyway, this game had government approval.
How do you figure that?
In fact, they told us to.
To what?
Keep them rolling.
I give up. Write your check and get it in the mail. And I don't like that letter. It's too facetious for a cause like this.
Oh, I suppose you could write a better one.
I can, and I did.
Huh?
Here it is. Dear Mr. President, enclosed is our small contribution to the wonderful work which is brought to a focus each year on your birthday. With it go our prayers that our nation and the world may soon be free of the disease that takes little children for its victims, and that a little change from a lot of big people will bring about a big change in the lives of a lot of little people. We know that to you, such a wish is the same as saying happy birthday. Respectfully yours, Fibber McGee and Molly. Is that all right, dearie?
It sure is. Good night.
Good night, Al.
Well, let me see what's left, Mr. President. I told you all about what we're laughing about, singing about, and swinging about, and thinking about. I guess the only thing left is to tell you what we're hoping about.
I am going to read you a letter. It's from my son. It reads, Dear Father, I started to date
this letter December 6th. And now I see it's half an hour after midnight, and I remember how meticulous you were about times and dates, so I changed the date line. It's a very warm night. One of many subtropical nights down here that have steamed away all memory of my good New England ancestry. Oh, please understand me. I'm not ashamed of the long generations of us who had to break ice from around the wells, but, oh, it's good to be warm and quite alive. And it's about being alive that I want to write you, Father. In your last letter, you made a wish for me. Do you recall? You said that you wished I could have, in this, my 20th year, the life you knew when you were 20. And then you filled 5 solid pages with memories of that year. The glorious turn of the century, you called it. America, after long years of struggling, was sitting down to enjoy her new richness of soil and forest and mines, the accumulation of all the hard work of all her little people. And men like you built their homes and raised their families and put their money in the banks, and life outside was bright and glistening. Men wrote about when knighthood was in flower and sang of Daisy Bells and read of David Harum and applauded actors playing Beau Brummel and Monte Cristo and Ben Hur and Floridora. The glorious 1900s, yes. And America was rich and growing richer, and everything would always be that way, for we indeed were quite the wisest, and there was no world but our world. And there were 2 broad oceans all around us, and life was good and safe, safe, everlastingly safe. And that's why you wanted to give me your old world, Father, to give me safety. But now I must tell you I don't want it. For in that safety was a decay that grew and grew. A rottenness of men who thought security could be bought with strong beams in their houses and thick vaults in their banks. Who talked of Christ, yet who applauded evil when it grew powerful. Who thought that the world of their family was more important than the world of men. That safety, Father? No. Not at the price of a world where men grow fat and children hungry. Not a world where every 50 years they blast and bomb and burn your churches. Where power feeds itself on persecution, where deviltry of self stands upon the throats of all the little people. I don't want that world. This is my world and this is my day. For now at last men fight and know that they're fighting against the miseries you forgot were in your world. Good and evil, clearer than ever before in the history of man, stand facing each other across the blood and tears. Yes, this is my day, Father. Our day, our fight. I may die today, tomorrow, very soon, perhaps, but I'll be fighting for my world. And even dead, it will be my world. A world of people living in the peace that will come. Must come. The peace of all the brotherhood of men together at last in common decency, in simple justice.
So ends the letter from the man who was my son. Dated December 7th, Pearl Harbor.
Thank you, Mr. Elliot Lewis. And thank you, Art Schobler, for the words, and Eric Wilson for the special musical score. Mr. President, there's something else I ought to tell you about America. All over the country, everybody in their own way, some with words out loud and some kind of inside themselves. They're praying. Yes, praying. Well, I guess that's all, Mr. President. Except this. There's lots and lots of people listening into this. And like somebody said on this, what's going to be your 60th birthday, their hearts are with you. Good night.
Ladies and gentlemen, you have just heard Hollywood's March of Dimes of the Air. The Committee for the Celebration of the President's Birthday wishes to thank Arch Obler, who wrote and produced tonight's salute to the President's 60th birthday. Their thanks also go to the Hollywood Victory Committee, to Tommy Cook, the boy, and to the orchestra and chorus under the direction of Gordon Jenkins. This is Harlow Wilcox, reminding you to send your dimes and dollars to the President now for the sake of your children and your neighbor's children. Keep them walking.
The Hollywood March of Dimes of the Air, on Tuned to Yesterday from January 24th, 1942. Although we didn't hear it in this previous hour, the show marked the only time that actress Greta Garbo was heard on the air live. But it seems that in the surviving recording of the program, her part has been cut for mysterious reasons. And that wraps up this hour of Variety on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark the Billionaire. Thanks for tuning in.